All right, it's First and Ten, the podcast on the Saturday Down South Network. We're coming at you for the next, 45, 50 minutes, talking ball in the SEC. No one breaks it down better here than First and Ten, the podcast. We got a lot to get into today. Big game going on in Lexington, Kentucky Saturday. We're going to talk with Steven Johnson, quarterback at Kentucky. He's going to talk about how, a little nutty right now in Lexington, Kentucky. And everybody's feeling pretty good about themselves. We're also going to get into the big games this week, five picks this week, and we're going to break down Chip Kelly, the man, the legend, the coach in waiting that has every coach on the hot seat. And that's, I imagine it's probably like 40 or 50 coaches right now, the way things have taken off with the quote-unquote hot seat. So far after 3 weeks, he's got them all nervous. We'll get into all of that right now. Okay, let's bring in Steven Johnson, star quarterback at Kentucky, the unbeaten Wildcats. Big game this weekend against SEC East Division rival Florida at what no doubt will be an electric Commonwealth Stadium. Steven, we're 4 weeks in. Everyone is talking about Kentucky. This is what you guys have worked for. It's what you talked about in the summer at SEC Media Days. Is it strange to suddenly be in this situation?
Not so much. I mean, we're pretty confident here in Kentucky on what we had planned for this upcoming season. So to everybody else it might have been, but to us, I mean, we're just going week by week on what we need to do.
You know, that's strange for people to hear, though, for you guys to say, look, we planned this all along. This is where we were going to be. Was there that much confidence among your teammates?
Absolutely. I mean, all of us knew there's a bunch of talented guys in this team. And so we all knew that we could definitely get anything that we wanted done as long as we put our mindsets to it. So, I mean, our goal has been from week one to go week to week and win every game that we can.
So the Florida streak's at 30 years, Steven. That's a long time. I mean, how cool would it be to be the team that breaks it?
It'll be phenomenal. We've got some things planned for this Saturday. So, we've always got to go out there and execute. And I think it'll end in our favor.
Is this something where you go out there and you just got to play your game? Or will you do different things? Will you have some tricks? Will you do some unique things?
No, not really. We just have to, like I said, we have a game plan set up. All we have to do is execute. That's the main thing Coach Grant and Coach Stoops focus. Really tries to have us hone in on is just to execute our plays, do our job, and we'll be just fine.
So Mark Stoops was a little upset after you guys beat South Carolina last week. He was saying that, this Kentucky team got no respect as a 7-point underdog. Now you're a 3-point underdog at home. He said it motivated you guys last week. Does that insult of being a home underdog, does that work again this week?
I guess a little bit so. We're just going to do the same thing. Like I said, we just have to go out there and execute. Our main thing is to focus on us and not on the other team on the other side of the ball. So as long as we do our job, like I said, Coach Grant and Coach Stoops really try to have us focus on that, and we'll be just fine.
You guys know kind of the narrative of Kentucky football over the years now. Is it exciting that you have a chance to change that?
Absolutely. Like I said before, we've got a lot of talented guys in this team, so we all know that we can do anything we set our minds to, and that's our goal is to win as many games as we can. We're going to try and do that starting this Saturday.
I think one of the things, Steven, that people really have been overlooked the first 3 weeks is your defense is playing really well. I mean, they're stopping the run. They're creating turnovers. Does that allow you guys as an offense to play with a little more confidence, maybe a little more, edge, knowing that you've got a defense back there that can erase any mistakes that happen?
Absolutely. Just to have those guys on the other side of the ball on our team be able to stop people from running the ball, from passing the ball, from executing their plays really gives us a little bit more confidence on the offensive side to go out there and know that we can play mistake-free football and go out there and do what we need to do.
So you talked this offseason, Steven, about becoming a better thrower, that was your plan all offseason. You wanted to be more accurate. You wanted to be more confident. 3 weeks in, where do you see the change after three games? I mean, do you feel more confident? Do you feel like you're close to where you want to be?
I'm always my own biggest critic. So if, if I'm not 100% on completions and targets and decisions, then I'm never really happy with myself. But definitely making moves in the right direction on becoming that.
Are you consciously trying to go through your progressions more and not be okay? First guy's not open. I'm going to run now.
Absolutely. We've got great plays. As long as I get through my progressions, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and even go maybe to sometimes our fifth progression, and not just have to run the ball as soon as there's a little bit of pressure. I mean, I think that'll work out in our favor too.
So listen, I've known Mark Stoops for a few years now. He is one intense dude. He loves to compete. You guys ever get after it, you know, away from the field, one-on-one in basketball or maybe in individual drills? What's it like when you do?
We're all really competitive. So, I mean, we'll go to each other's house and play video games, play Madden, play 2K. We bowl a little bit too. We definitely are extremely competitive on our team.
So does Coach Stoops bowl with you guys or against you guys?
He has before. He's bowled with us before. He's a very, I don't know how to say it, average bowler, I guess.
So he's like a sub 100 bowler or worse?
No. He breaks 100, but I mean it's just around there.
So is he using the rails or no rails?
Oh, no, we definitely use rails. Yeah, we definitely don't allow that to happen.
So listen, do you go to Kentucky basketball games in the off season?
Yeah, whenever I get the chance to, yeah, in the off season. I mean, I love to go out there and support them. I mean, going to one of their games is like going to an NBA game. I mean, it's always sold out. I mean, it's just incredible to have that experience and go to be able to go and see that.
What's that crowd like at Rupp when everything's clicking and it's buzzing? And I mean, what's that emotion like?
It's just incredible. You got a loss for words sometimes just to be in there. It's extremely loud. All of our fans here at CBN are just incredible and just show great support for all these teams.
Now think about that, Steven, and think about how cool that would be to have that atmosphere at Commonwealth Stadium this weekend. I mean, you think that's possible?
Absolutely. From what I've heard, the game's been sold out already. So to have that already happen on a Tuesday, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I just can't wait to see the atmosphere, see what it's going to be like, and to play in front of all of our fans.
So a few years ago when you signed to Kentucky, did you ever think you'd be at the point where, you know, if a couple things go your way in the next few weeks, you could be forcing Kentucky fans to make a decision in late October between Midnight Madness or actually watching the football team compete for an SEC East Division title? I mean, how cool is that?
I mean, it's incredible. To have a great, obviously a great basketball program at our school, and then to be doing pretty well in football, it really gives our fans some excitement all throughout the year.
Is that intimidating, Steven, or is it motivating? Like, you see how good they are, and it makes you want to get to that level.
It's definitely motivating. All those guys, you know, they're great guys, pretty cool guys to hang around with too. Just to try and get a crowd like them and do some things like they do. I mean, it's just a great experience to be around.
Have you heard from those guys this week, or do you expect to hear from them?
I haven't talked to him too much. I got a couple classes with some of those guys, but I know they're probably excited for us too. So,
yeah, I mean, once you get their attention, you've kind of made it then, right?
I guess so. I mean, we really don't think of it too like that too much.
Hey, listen, man, I appreciate all your help. Good luck this weekend, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's Steven Johnson. One of the main reasons, if not actually the main reason, Kentucky's unbeaten. They're 3-0. They're playing host to Florida this weekend in a major SEC East showdown. Did you ever think you'd hear that, people? Kentucky in a major SEC East Division showdown. It's fantastic. It's great for the league. I mean, when I saw Mark Stoops after they beat South Carolina, and let's not minimize that win at South Carolina. That was a fantastic win. Look, I've been a guy who all offseason in the first 3 weeks of the season have been saying there are two sleepers in this league in each division. One was South Carolina in the East. The other was Mississippi State in the West. And I really believe that that win at South Carolina was a very, very good, might have been Mark Stoops' biggest win at Kentucky, considering how well South Carolina was playing, how confident South Carolina was playing. That atmosphere last weekend in Columbia was a madhouse. And Kentucky went in there and played really well, played really smart. You know, South Carolina made some mistakes. Deebo Samuel got hurt. But Kentucky won that game. South Carolina needed to stop late in that game on a third down. Steven Johnson takes off on a 54-yard scramble to essentially seal the game. Just a big, big win for Kentucky. And now it's Commonwealth Stadium, and it's this Saturday, and it's not basketball in Kentucky anymore. It's about football. It's about football. And that, to me, is the most refreshing part about it. And I love Kentucky basketball. Don't get me wrong. Love watching those teams. But I think it's great for that university that football is in a situation where it's a big game. And it is genuinely a big game. Now, we'll get more into that later. We got a lot to get into today, including, of course, our weekly five picks against the spread, everyone. It's not a little 50-50 coin flip stuff, okay? We're not guessing. We're not throwing darts at a board here, all right? This is against the spread. And again, I'm not a gambler. I'm not promoting gambling. Just in case, you know, you feel like having funsies with your friends. That's all. We're also going to get into Kentucky's opponent this weekend, Florida. And the worst thing that could have happened to Florida last week, the absolute worst thing, was completing that Hail Mary that really wasn't a Hail Mary. It was just a go by Cleveland that somehow Tennessee didn't cover. Still can't believe that. Just boggles the mind that you're in a situation like that and you're not playing at least four deep, if not four rush or three rush and seven back or eight back. Hard to believe. Hard to believe. We're going to get into that. We're also going to get into the fascination of Chip Kelly. And do people really remember why Chip Kelly left Oregon? It's really easy to say, yeah, well, Chip wanted to go test the NFL waters and see if he could coach at the greatest level with the greatest players. Chip left, everyone, with the NCAA posse on his heels. So we're going to get into that as well. All right, but before we go any further, we need to take care of some house cleaning. Real quickly, we want to talk about our fantastic sponsor here at the Saturday Down South Podcast Network, TicketCity.com. Ball is everywhere, everyone. Games everywhere. We love them. We understand what it means to be college football fans. It's what you invest in the weekend. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday ordeal. A wonderful, wildly terrific ordeal. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to invest money and time, go to a game, drive to a game, fly to a game, why not get the best tickets you can? Now, we've been working with Ticket City for a long time, and they are the experts in college football, having served over 1.5 million customers. They have been the place to go for SEC tickets for almost 30 years. And now they're offering $20 off to all Saturday Down South podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com and enter the discount code SDS20. That's Sally Delta Sally 20 while checking out to save $20 on your order. So go to TicketCity.com. That's TicketCity.com to get your SEC ducats today. Today. All right, so let's circle back now to the whole Florida offense. How they beat Tennessee on the Hail Mary that wasn't a Hail Mary. And how it's the worst thing that could have happened to that Florida team. I mean, the win is great. You win. You're not 0-2 for the first time since 1971. And the folks in Gainesville don't want to run you out of town if you're Jim McElwain. Okay? But the reality is, here's what happened with Florida with that play. That one play was such an enormous sense of relief. know, not only for Florida fans, I really believe if you saw Jim McElwain after that game in the CBS interview, it was more than just an exhale with him to win that game. That was literally like a 600-pound elephant off his shoulders. He was emotional. His eyes were watering. His voice was cracking. He was sounded like he was going to cry. Just a great win. A great win for his team. And I really believe, you know, it's the old thing that Steve Spurrier said when he finally left Florida after 12 years there in Gainesville. Winning had become exhaling, and losing had become a tragedy. No matter who it was, week by week. And I think Jim McElwain sees that right now, and he's in year three right now, and he's won back-to-back East Division champions. So let's go back to the Hail Mary that wasn't. The 63-yard Hail Mary that wasn't. You take away that play and Malik Davis' 74-yard touchdown run that wasn't, the fumble into the end zone and the touchback. And this is what the Florida offense looks like. Okay? This is what it looks like after two games this season. Without that touchdown on the Hail Mary that wasn't. One touchdown on offense all season. The Florida defense has three. Felipe Franks, starting quarterback, has a pass efficiency rating of 126.1, which is about 100 points lower than the nation's leader, Baker Mayfield, at 224.22. Florida's three running backs in two games have combined for 134 yards. Now, this is without that 74-yard run, okay? 134 yards on 34 carries. That's 67 yards a game and 3.9 yards per carry. The offense, without those two plays, 435 total yards in two games. They've run 110 plays in two games. 55 plays a game. Clemson runs 55 plays and a half. Those 110 plays in two games, by the way, are last in the nation among teams who have played at least two games. Last. Without those two big chunk plays, there are two teams in college football worse than Florida in total offense. UTEP and Georgia Southern. You see where we're headed with this thing, everyone? Now, I'm all happy that Felipe Franks showed up at his history class on Monday, and his professor gave him a trophy. Now, the trophy is usually given away in that class for someone who asks an important question or answers an important question. You know, they give the students a trophy. I'm all for that. Keep involved. Felipe walked in and got a trophy. And the professor said, hey, that's for the pass. And it was funny because Felipe Franks was asked at the annual Florida Media Day on Monday, you know, did you get a standing ovation or something? And he said, no, just a couple of stares. It was kind of awkward. Which is exactly what the Florida offense is. Kind of awkward. And now they're going on a road against a defense that's playing really well, that's number three in the nation in stopping the run, that's creating turnovers, that's playing in the biggest game in Commonwealth Stadium in a long, long time. A team that hasn't beaten Florida for 30 straight seasons. This is a very dangerous game for Florida. You lose this game, you lose to Kentucky, it's going to be just as bad as going 0-2 and losing that Tennessee game. And this is nothing against Kentucky. This is just the idea, the thought in the heads of the collective Gator fan that you're losing to Kentucky. Maybe that's why Jim McElwain at his press conference Monday was, again, very subdued. Very subdued. Usually a very jovial guy, very happy guy. Hasn't looked happy the last couple weeks. Has not looked happy. Somehow, this guy who's won back-to-back East Division championships, there's already this narrative floating around that he's got to win. You know, he's with everyone else now in college football, all the other coaches. Winner, you're out. Winner, you're fired. It's all about hiring and firing, hiring and firing. Which, of course, brings us to our next topic of Chip Kelly. So, depending on who you listen to, or what you've been reading, And believe me now, the topic du jour now in college football is firing coaches, okay? So everybody's writing about it, everybody's talking about it, and depending on who you're reading or listening to, here's your group of SEC coaches. This is just the SEC now. We're not even talking about national college football, okay? This is just the SEC coaches who better start panicking already, okay? Already. Butch Jones at Tennessee, Jim McElwain at Florida, Gus Malzahn at Auburn, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, Brett Bielema at Arkansas, Matt Luke at Ole Miss, and everyone, ladies and gentlemen, after one game at LSU, at Orgeron, already, this is where we sit. These coaches already better be worried because the wonderful and all-telling and all-powerful Chip Kelly is out there looking for work. So before we go further, let me just explain this. I truly believe that Chip Kelly is going to end up in the NFL. I think that's where he wants to coach. A lot of these guys, once they get the taste of the NFL and not having to recruit, it's a lot easier for them to do nothing but ball. It's all football. There's no recruiting. There's no academics. There's no worrying about who's going to be out at 2 a.m. on Saturday after the game. Okay? You're dealing with grown men. That's what they want to do. I still believe that's going to end up being his number one choice. If he gets the right deal in the NFL, that's where Chip Kelly will go, all right? So now that we've started with that foundation, let's move to, okay, we've named all those coaches. There's still another four or five or six national jobs that could be available. That could be a perfect fit for Chip Kelly. But to me, here's the strange thing that for some reason has been overlooked. Chip Kelly, after he left Oregon, was given an 18-month show cause order for NCAA violations that occurred at Oregon under his watch. Now, a show cause order, I guess the best way to explain it is, there is no stiffer punishment for a coach by the NCAA than a show cause order. Basically, what it does is it prevents that coach from coaching at the NCAA level for as long as the order is. Okay? He got an 18-month show cause order, which essentially, had he stayed in college football, would have kept him out of college football for 2 years. But he left for the NFL months earlier, right on the heels of the NCAA just basically running him out of town. And here's what's interesting to me. After Chip got the job with the Eagles, he came back and he went to the NCAA meeting where the NCAA met with Oregon and told them, this is what we got on you. We want to hear what you think. He was there. He told his side of it. And he said afterwards that he wasn't running from the NCAA. He wanted to coach in the NFL. So let me explain to you what Chip Kelly did while he was at Oregon, all right, and what got him that 18-month show cause. Just in case you've forgotten or you don't really remember or you don't really care. So when Chip was at Oregon, he set up a situation where a street agent by the name of Willie Lyles was funneling players to Chip, and Chip would pay him cash. Oregon paid Willie Lyles, who was a quote-unquote recruiting guru, I guess is the best way they said it in their defense. $25,000 they paid Willie Lyles, okay? Now what happened here is Lyles would steer these elite players, including guys like LaMichael James, who, oh, by the way, before Marcus Mariota came around and won the Heisman at Oregon, LaMichael James may have been the most prominent player at Oregon in 10, 25 years. Just an unbelievable player at Oregon. Lake Seastrunk, who was a five-star elite recruit, never really worked out at Oregon, but had a nice career at Baylor before he graduated. He was also another player that was steered there by Willie Lyles. So when the NCAA investigated, or when it was clear the NCAA was going to come after Oregon for this, Chip had the brilliant idea of asking Willie Lyles for recruiting information after the fact, after he already been paid, after it was clear the NCAA was snooping around. So Lyles sent him this recruiting book of information of, you know, players who allegedly he had scouted and told Oregon, look, these guys are good. This guy is this, this guy is that. You know, like what recruiting guys do, okay? None of those guys, by the way, get paid, but that's another story for another day. So he sends Chip this book, and then lo and behold, this book that Willie Lyles, the street agent, sent Chip Kelly was full of players who weren't even in this recruiting classes that Chip was paying for. Out-of-date players, out-of-date information. Let me explain something to you. The NCAA doesn't willy-nilly randomly give out show cause orders, okay? You got to earn it. You have to earn something like that as a coach, all right? You have to knowingly break a significant NCAA rule and or lie to the NCAA about the rule to be giving the harshest punishment for any coach. Chip Kelly did both. He received the dreaded show cause order not only for paying a street agent money to steer players to Oregon, but for, and this is the NCAA's words, misleading the NCAA. Now, you know, in the real world, everyone, we call that lying. The NCAA doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, so they call it misleading. Okay? And he tried to cover up that lie with another lie by getting that information from Willie Lyles, that outdated information, before he was exposed in the scheme. And then, yeah, I'm going to go coach in the NFL. I think I've always wanted to coach in the NFL. I always wanted to see how my offense works in the NFL. I'm going to go coach in the NFL. This, everyone, is the dream scenario for all these deep pocket boosters in the SEC. This guy, this coach, believe me, Chip is a fantastic coach. Okay? Fantastic. Chip's system, when he was at Oregon, was cutting edge. Blur ball. Fast. Just absolutely oppressive to defenses. Now everybody's doing that system, though. And everybody has new twists to it. And new tweaks to it. Everybody's got dual threat quarterbacks that can run and throw. Everybody's doing the zone read stuff. It's not so cutting edge anymore, okay? A lot of good coaches out there that are doing a lot of good things with that system that Chip Kelly was using in Oregon, which, oh, by the way, was really, really originally, not originally, but one of the first guys to really get into it in college football was Rich Rodriguez long, long, long time ago at a D3 school in West Virginia, long, long, long time ago. And then Rich became an assistant at Clemson. They started doing it there. And if you remember Woodrow Dancer, man, oh man, was he a great player. Perfect fit for that system. The point is, a lot of guys are doing Chip's system right now. A lot of teams have dual threat elite quarterbacks that can hurt you with their feet and throw on the ball. Chip's a very good coach. Chip's system is fantastic. His players play hard for him. But I just don't know if you are a university president, you're an athletic director, you're going to sell Chip Kelly to your board of regents, board of trustees, to your deep pocket boosters, knowing what he did at Oregon. And that's not something where you make a mistake. A mistake was made. I didn't know this guy was this. I didn't know this guy was... He paid him $25,000 for nothing. Months after the fact, he asked for the recruiting information. He paid him $25,000 to steer players toward Oregon. That's why he got the show Clausey Dig. That, of course, and misleading, according to the NCAA. You and I call it lying. They call it misleading. Misleading the NCAA about the entire process. So not only did he cheat, okay, he also lied about it. So you're going to drop a five-year contract, and it's going to take $7 million, $8 million to get Chip Kelly. You're going to spend, on a five-year deal, $35 million, $40 million, okay, on a guy who has this track record. This is what you're going to do. To me, that's Looney Tunes, absolute Looney Tunes. But again, if you listen to the blowhards out there, Butch Jones is going to get fired, Jim McElwain is going to get fired, Gus Malzahn, Kevin Sumlin, Brett Bielema, Matt Luke, and even the guy one game into his career at LSU, Ed Orgeron. Why? Well, because the great and wonderful Chip Kelly's out there. And somebody's going to get him. So why not us? All right, let's take a quick break and we'll move on to the weekly five picks against the spread. Kind of tough last week. 2-3 last week. 9-6 for the season. That's a 600 winning percentage. I'm still winning. I'm still over 500. If you're still hanging with me, you're still winning Monopoly money, okay? Still coming in. Five picks against the spread. We're going to start out with the intriguing game of the week. Alabama going to Vanderbilt. Commodores getting 18.5 points. A Vandy defense that's playing really, really well. A Vandy team that is really confident. A Vandy team that I think this is very interesting. 19 of its 22 players, 19 of the 22 starting positions at Vanderbilt are upperclassmen, juniors or seniors. 13 seniors, 13 of the 19 are seniors, 7 are fifth-year seniors. People, that's important. I'm telling you right now, that is important when you're playing games like that in the SEC. I go back to years ago, I think it was 2007 maybe, when Wake Forest won the ACC and Jim Grobe had an offensive line of nothing but fifth-year seniors. And they were just mauling people. They were mauling guys that were going to play in the NFL because they've been doing it for 5 years. They understood it. They understood the little nuances of the position and how you became better than the guy next to you even if he was more talented than you. Look, I'm not saying Vandy's going to win the game, all right? I'm telling you, Vandy's going to scare a lot of people this year, a lot of good teams this year, and they're going to win a couple games against good teams this year. They've already done it once last week against Kansas State. You got Alabama coming in, 18.5 points for Vandy. That Vandy defense is good, really good. They're going to force Jalen Hurts to throw the ball to win the game. If Vandy can do anything on offense against Alabama, that's a tall, tall task. Those 18.5 points will be enough, but I just can't see Vandy doing anything on offense. I don't see them having enough to scare that Alabama defense, to do anything significantly against the Alabama defense. So then you're looking at, all right, so then how do you cover 18.5? Is it a 30-6 game? Is it a 30-10 game? Yeah, I could definitely see something like that. 30-10. I'm not sure Alabama can get 30 on them. So if you're thinking Alabama gets what? 25, 27 points? Look, my math's not that good, but it's got, I mean, you're looking at that. If they get 27, you got to hold Vandy to a touchdown. You know, you get a defensive score, you get a fumble on a short field, you get a field goal, and it's 27-10, and all of a sudden, cover! I'm taking the 18.5. I'm taking Vandy in the 18.5. I guess is what I'm trying to tell you right now. All right, let's move now to Auburn. Playing at Missouri. The Tigers, after just playing so horribly on defense, then last week struggling on offense. Oh, I forgot about Barry Odom, too. Let's add Barry Odom to that win now or Chip Kelly's coming to replace you list. So that makes it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the SEC coaches are in the win now or Chip Kelly's at your door. Chip Kelly and all his NCAA baggage. Missouri's getting 19 in that game. Auburn still has no idea what it's doing on offense. We spoke about this last week. I do not understand what's so difficult about this. Spread the field. Put the receivers outside the numbers. Let Jarrett Stidham use his strong arm. Spread the defense. Find holes. Make throws. And then come with the big battering rams at tailback. And just power run. Yet Auburn likes to play all bunched off in that phone booth. And, oh, we got this bunch here. And let's run this twist off of that. And just spread everything out. And let Stidham throw the ball. Let your receivers win on the outside. Missouri's getting 19. I'm taking Missouri in the 19. I don't see Auburn scoring points, enough points, I should say, even against that bad Missouri defense. I don't see it happen. I'm taking Missouri in the 19. Big game in North Texas, Arlington, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. Aggies have won 4 straight over the Hogs. This, as much as anything, has been the indicator of Brett Bielema at Arkansas, this game. Arkansas had the better team three of the 4 years there. They've lost all 4 games. Should have won 2 of the games. Lost twice in overtime. This is the essence of Brett Bielema at Arkansas right now. This game, you have to win this game if you are Arkansas right now. You're playing a Texas A&M team that has no idea what's going on right now offensively. Freshman Kellen Moon, the quarterback, going to be a very good player. Doesn't know the offense right now. He's struggling a little bit. All freshmen do, okay? They can't get the ball to Christian Kirk. Starting tailback's coming back this week. Defense has been so-so. This is the point now if you're Arkansas. You have got to win this game. This is it. This is a game that has embarrassed Arkansas for 4 straight years now. Because of the ugliness of one loss, because they should have won both overtime games, because they should have won another game, and lost all 4. This game has come to define Arkansas under Brett Bielema, and now this is it. This is a game he has to win. I'm not saying he has to win or Chip Kelly's going to be at his door, which is what you're going to hear a lot of people say. But for Brett to get where he wants to be at Arkansas, to be a team that can compete for the West Division title, these are the games you got to win. All right, let's move on to Florida at Kentucky. I like Kentucky straight up in the game, but you're going to give me 3 points. I will take those points. Every streak has to come to an end. Everyone. And this week, in a crazy Commonwealth Stadium, the streak comes to an end. Kentucky wins, goes to 4-0, and everyone in the world is starting to talk about Kentucky football, which I think is fantastic because for 3 forevers now, all we talk about is Kentucky basketball. Let's talk about Kentucky football for a little bit. All right, last game, last pick is also our last segment of First and 10 this week. Mississippi State getting 6.5 points going to Georgia in a big, big game. Now think about this. In 2014, Mississippi State had 3 straight wins over top 10 teams at LSU, Texas A&M, and Auburn. Those three wins were enough to elevate them to number 1 in the nation. They spent, I believe, 6 weeks at number 1 in the nation, including the first college football playoff poll. Okay, this time around, it'll be 3 straight games against top 15 teams. LSU at Georgia. At Auburn. We saw what happened with LSU. They won by 30. Ed Orgeron is suddenly now fighting off Chip Kelly. These 3 games will define the first half of the season for Mississippi State. These key games against ranked teams are also where we are going to see just how far Nick Fitzgerald has progressed as a thrower. He spoke all offseason about this is how we're going to be better on offense at Mississippi State. If you've listened to the First and 10 podcast, he was our first guest this season. He spoke at length about, here's what we try to do in the offseason. because I want to be a better thrower. And if the LSU game last week is any indicator, he's off to a hell of a start, people. A hell of a start. Listen, in three games last year against ranked opponents, all right? Fitzgerald completed 45% of his passes. Threw for 474 yards and had two touchdowns and three interceptions in three games. Mississippi State was 1-2 in those games. And the only game they won was against a fading Texas A&M team. And Fitzgerald's passer rating, efficiency rating, was just a god-awful 91.3. That's, you know, we spoke earlier. Baker Mayfield leads the nation right now 224. Now think about that 91.3 rating from last year against ranked teams, all right? He was horrible against LSU last year. Nick Fitzgerald was. This year against LSU, last weekend, he was 15-23 for 180 yards with two touchdowns, no interceptions. His pass efficiency rating against LSU that one game, 298.13. Mississippi State will go as far as Nick Fitzgerald takes them. As a passer, as a runner, as a gutty guy who does whatever it takes to win games. Sort of like, sort of like Dak Prescott. If you watch Nick Fitzgerald in that game against LSU, there was a point, and I believe early third quarter, he got sacked, and he got hammered. He came off the field, and he was kind of, you know, a little woozy. He was holding his hand. He came back and absolutely played lights out the rest of the game. That one touchdown run on the third down, just a fantastic play, a gutty play. That's what you need from your star quarterback, from your leader, from the guy who, when you need a third and nine, when you're down seven on the road, everybody's looking at him in the huddle. Make something happen. That's what you need from that guy. That's what Nick Fitzgerald has to be. Not only this weekend down in Athens, but also the following week at Auburn and the rest of the season. He can be that type of guy. Is Mississippi State the type of team that can win these three games like they did in 2014? They absolutely are. Are they the type of team that can then beat Alabama? I don't know. That's a tall order, not just for Mississippi State. That's a tall order for anyone. Like in my mind right now, it's not even a question. It's Alabama and Clemson in that championship game. It's going to be a third time in that game. The rubber match. I don't see anyone else even coming close to either one of those teams. But understand this. You get a turnover here. You get a short field there. You get a score early. You get a little momentum. You get a little confidence. Jalen Hurts starts to struggle in the passing game again. You never know what happens in these big games. For years, we've known what has happened to Mississippi State in these games against Alabama. It's clear what has happened. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself because this is going to be a grinder this weekend in Athens. Georgia is a very, very good team. Georgia is going to win 10 or 11 games. Maybe more. I don't care who's playing quarterback at Georgia. That's a really, really good team. And oh, by the way, Georgia, we'll circle back real quick with Chip Kelly. Georgia beat Notre Dame, and all of a sudden now, Brian Kelly now has Chip Kelly at his heels. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. To continue the absurdity of the Chip Kelly madness, the weekly Chip Kelly madness. Georgia's going to be a really good team by the end of the year. They're an 11-12 win team. They're a team that I think if the right things happen, and they're playing in that championship game against Alabama, they absolutely can win that game. So, huge game this weekend. Huge test for Mississippi State. But if they round that out, and they beat Georgia, and they beat Auburn on the 30th, you know, then all of a sudden you're looking at this team and you're thinking, all right, they get Alabama at home. This could be a situation where who knows what could happen. At least you put yourself and an opportunity in a home game in Starkville against the King to take a shot at it. All right, I told you Mississippi State, Georgia was going to be our last segment, but you know what? I want to get into one more thing real quick. I want to talk about why I hate the AP poll, why I hate polls in general, okay? And I think if you look at what happened in the most recent AP poll, there's a voter who works for the Quad City Times in Iowa. His name is Steve Batterson. He's been voting in the poll for years, okay? Steve Batterson did not vote for Mississippi State this week in his AP poll. Okay? Steve Batterson had LSU ranked number 19 in his poll. Think about that for a second, all right? This, to me, is a major problem, not only because Steve Batterson either forgot Mississippi State or didn't even watch the game. Either way, it's wrong because either way, there has to be a failsafe at the Associated Press when they see his poll come in and they see there's no Mississippi State within his top 25. At that point, the first thing you do is you make a call to Steve and you say, Steve, you must have forgotten Mississippi State because you got LSU at 19 and you don't have Mississippi State ranked at all. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Mississippi State absolutely emasculated LSU. Won by 30 points. That didn't happen. So you have the ability to make a mistake, and everybody makes a mistake. He could have very easily forgotten it. But the failsafe is there for the ability of someone at the Associated Press to call him and say, hey, man, you left Mississippi State off your ballot. What's going on? And it didn't happen. That's why I hate polls. Because it's either someone who's not following the game voting in a poll, or it's a situation where it's just reckless. And it's just any team, anywhere, let's just get it out. After the first four, it doesn't matter. And that's wrong. That's all kinds of wrong. All right, we've come to the point with the program where I remind you that you can go to Saturday Down South podcast on iTunes, subscribe, like, put a smiley face emoji next to, tweet about it, Facebook about it. You love First and Ten the podcast. I'd really appreciate it. We're here with you every week, bringing you the best SEC talk. We'll see you next week, people.